From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
What binds us together in this hemisphere are shared democratic values.
That was U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson speaking at the University of Texas at Austin on February 1st. He was responding to this question from Professor Will Inboden, Executive Director of the Clements Center and a professor at the LBJ School of Public Affairs at UTA, about the Monroe Doctrine.
In a few years, we celebrate the 200th anniversary of the Monroe Doctrine, which for a very young United States was our assertion of our efforts to keep European colonial powers out of the Western Hemisphere, to protect our security, but also to promote the three pillars of the speech you talked about today, security, liberty, and prosperity. So you as Secretary, you kind of inherit that 200-year tradition. Looking back, how would you regard the Monroe Doctrine? Has it been more of a success or a failure, especially as you look at our challenges today?
Well, I think it clearly has been a success. I think it clearly was an important commitment at the time, and I think over the years that has all continued to frame the relationship. Having said that, it's easy for the United States as a country, because of our size and our engagements with so many countries and regions around the world, to, through nothing more than just perhaps a period of neglect, to let certain relationships atrophy a bit. And I think we've gone through those periods of time in our history as well. And if you look back, and whether you can go by individual country or regionally as well, due to other events, sometimes I think we have forgotten about the importance of the Monroe Doctrine and what it meant to this hemisphere and maintaining those shared values. So I think it's as relevant today as it was the day it was written.
The Monroe Doctrine was the term coined for U.S. policy in the Americas beginning in 1823 under U.S. President James Monroe. Its stated objective was to free the newly independent states of Latin America and the Caribbean from European intervention. The Monroe Doctrine, under its terms, stated that it was opposed to colonialism in the Western Hemisphere. Washington has referred to the Monroe Doctrine with respect to efforts by China and, to a lesser extent, Russia, to reach agreements with various countries in Latin America and the Caribbean. Tillerson himself has characterized China's involvement in the Western Hemisphere as neocolonialism. For more on that, we spoke with our reporter from south of the border, Tony Solo, from Managua, Nicaragua, via Skype Thursday.
Let's look at that those remarks by Rex Tillerson and follow where the ramifications lead us.
Okay.
Because from my point of view, looking at the broader panorama of Latin America and the Caribbean, Rex Tillerson's remarks confirm that what we're dealing with in terms of the resurgence of right-wing governments using any subterfuge or any dirty trick possible to get into power, you know, soft coups or abusing institutional rules, abusing the judiciary, none of that has anything to do with democratic process. It's got nothing to do with the people of Latin America and the Caribbean saying, oh, the left wing and progressive policies were wrong after all. We're going to support right wing policies because we think that that's the best alternative to improve our lives.
Right.
It's got nothing to do with that.
Right.
What it's got to do with is, and Rex Tillerson has explicitly confirmed this now, it's got to do with a deliberate drive by the United States, given its foreign policy failures everywhere else in the world, to try and shore up its prestige, power, influence, control, status in Latin America and the Caribbean, which it's always regarded as its backyard. And when recently Donald Trump made those infamous remarks about, what was it, and can I use this word, whole countries, that caused such consternation among people, and all he was saying, he was just saying out loud what most of the United States and European elite think about impoverished countries in Latin America and elsewhere. So they they have the United States and Europe are faced with this rapidly closing window of opportunity, where they have to try and do something to protect their power and influence in the world against the increasingly assertive multipolar world, led mainly by China and Russia principally, but with Venezuela and Iran not far behind in terms of resisting doing what the United States wants. And that is the fundamental criteria of foreign policy for the United States. If a country does what they want, it's sheer gangster diplomacy. Do what we want or else.
Right. Do what I'm telling you. But, you know, it's interesting, too, just to let me interrupt for a moment, but to go to what Tillerson said in Austin. I'm looking at Foreign Policy magazine, the link that you sent to me. It's Tillerson took particular aim at China's economic approach to Latin America, which focused on gaining access to commodities from countries such as Brazil, Venezuela, Argentina, and Peru, but which has left little lasting benefit for those countries. This is Foreign Policy speaking now. And so here goes Tillerson. Latin America does not need new imperial powers that seek only to benefit their own people. I guess that's in contrast to the former and 200-year imperial power that sought only to benefit a few of our own people, but okay. Mm-hmm. And he says, this is the nested truth here. China's state-led model of development is reminiscent of the past. It doesn't have to be this hemisphere's future. In other words, the real problem is the fact that you have such a large public sector in the economy, or the real problem is they're sharing the money with the people instead of sending it to us.
Yeah, and it's such a disingenuous travesty of what in fact is happening, because everybody knows that China's trade and commercial and technical development cooperation policies are based on win-win, so that everybody benefits from that relationship. Right. And you can see that. And one of the countries that's been most successful at that, in building its relationship with China, has been Venezuela. And of course, that's one of the reasons, among many, why Venezuela is the target of an absolutely ruthless attack by the United States, its European allies, and local regional elites.
Right.
So we've talked about this so many times, and look at who is Rex Tillerson. I mean, he's the ex chief executive, isn't he?
Of ExxonMobil, right? Yeah, right.
So now, and what is Exxon doing right at this minute? Exxon has entered into an illegal oil exploration and exploitation deal off the coast of Guyana in maritime territory that's been disputed by Venezuela with Guyana for well over a century.
I mean, you can flesh that out even more. One, they're clearly stealing Venezuela's oil through this, you know, bogus claim by Guyana. In addition to that, they're competing with Venezuela's oil in the marketplace. And in addition to that, what they're doing is looking to set policy generally for how corporations like ExxonMobil deal with the places that have the commodities that they trade in.
Right. So, and in political terms, and the results of Tillerson's trip through Latin America, I think he visited Colombia and Argentina, among other places. Now, Colombia is a completely failed state. It's got more displaced people as a result of armed conflict than any country in the world, even more than Syria.
Yep.
I might be wrong about that, but
it's been going on 60 years instead of since 2011. Yeah. So it's clearly it's a mess.
Right, and so just in January, almost 30 community leaders were murdered by paramilitaries, and in one case, a young girl died in a bombardment. An indigenous girl in what was supposed to be a protected indigenous territory died in a bombardment by the Colombian Air Force. Now, somehow, the mainstream media might try to spin Colombia's reality in such a way as to make Venezuela appear the basket case country, when in fact Colombia is the basket case country. And so, and if in a single month in Venezuela 27 community leaders had been murdered, and a young girl blown up by the Venezuelan Air Force. Can you imagine what the headlines would be like?
Yeah.
But for Colombia, there's nothing. It barely even registers as a footnote in the inner pages of the mainstream corporate media. Mm. There's this deep underlying hypocrisy at almost every level, in the political level, in the Western media, on an economic level. The economic arguments around Latin America are almost always grossly dishonest and lacking in a focus on realities. But going back to what Tillerson said about China, and what he's doing there is confirming what we've been saying in almost every conversation we ever have about the general development of Latin America's foreign relations with the rest of the world. Even the right-wing elites in Latin America and the Caribbean recognize that they get a better deal with China than they do with the United States.
Right.
Now, what Rex Tillerson has done is going back to the political ramifications, the Venezuelan opposition and the Venezuelan government about 10 days ago were on the verge. They negotiated right down to the fine print, an agreement for coexistence, a political agreement about coexistence in Venezuela. At the very last minute, on the day that the Venezuelan opposition negotiators were due to sign the agreement, the lead negotiator got a call from Colombia, where Rex Tillerson just happened to be at the time, and turned around and said that there would be no deal. Okay. So that is an absolutely clear indication that the United States is directly intervening in a way like the puppet masters of the Venezuelan opposition. It's very difficult to contradict that reading of that episode. So, and in the same way, in Colombia, within Colombia itself, the ELN guerrilla group had been in peace negotiations with the administration of President Juan Manuel Santos. There was some incident, a relatively minor incident, and on that pretext, that around the same time of Tillerson's visit, Juan Manuel Santos pulled out of the peace talks, and now he's issued arrest warrants for the ELN leadership that were participating in that peace process.
Right.
So there again, you have another direct political ramification of this latest a swerve, if you like, in U.S. policy, whereby they've explicitly reinstated the Monroe Doctrine. But what they're essentially saying is, obviously, we don't want China, we don't want our Latin American backyard to have anything to do with China, or as little to do as possible.
Right.
Now, that's very difficult at this point, and I think that the once again, just as they failed elsewhere in the Middle East, in Southeast Asia, in the Korean Peninsula crisis, the U.S. foreign policy is failing across the board,
yep.
And they're going to fail here in Latin America too. Although there may be apparent positive results from their point of view, but in the short term, but over the medium and long term, that policy is going to fail, because what they're doing is, if you look at the way they're increasing their military presence, what they're doing is they're taking advantage of essentially illegitimate right-wing governments in Brazil, in Argentina. And when I say illegitimate, I don't mean that they didn't get elected. But what those governments are doing is completely the contrary to what the platform on which they were elected.
Well, actually, in Brazil, they didn't get elected. They removed the elected president.
Right. or in Ecuador. And let's look at Ecuador in a minute. But going back to this issue of how the United States is exploiting its relationships with right-wing usurper governments to increase its military presence, they've now agreed to establish a military stroke security base in northern Argentina. That on the pretext of their drug war. The drug war is the pretext that they always use, even that we know very well that the United States authorities themselves are up to their eyes in involvement in trafficking drugs and laundering money.
Right.
That's an open secret. But they continue to use the drug war as a pretext to militarize their relations in Latin America. Now, why do they want a base in northern Argentina? Because, in my opinion, China has agreed with Bolivia, Peru, and Brazil a transcontinental railway that will run from southern Peru across the Andes, across southern Brazil, just north of where that new military base is going to be based.
That's right.
And at the same time, the United States is increasing its military cooperation with the Brazilian armed forces, which is unprecedented in recent decades. And it's also increasing the level of its military exercises with other countries like, for example, Peru and Colombia. And remember that in Colombia they've already got six or seven bases, which they're using to monitor all kinds of aspects of the local regional situation, but in particular to monitor what's going on in Venezuela. Now, Juan Manuel Santos and the Venezuela has been very, very critical of the Venezuelan authorities ever since that visit by Tillerson. Is noticeably ramping up his rhetoric against Venezuela. He went so far as to call Venezuela a pathetic country, which from coming from him. Right. And coming from the government of Colombia, where they blow 13-year-old indigenous girls to smithereens,
right,
and is beyond pathetic itself. So it was very interesting to see over the last couple of days that a news item whereby Juan Manuel Santos and the government of President Nicolas Maduro of Venezuela have agreed to hold talks about frontier security. Now, that should be seen in the context whereby something over a year ago, maybe a little more, Venezuela completely sealed and shut off all cross-border activity at the border points between Colombia and Venezuela.
Right.
And I wouldn't be surprised if behind the scenes, and Nicolas Maduro was saying to Santos, look, either you... the illicit activities and the hostile activities that you have been promoting against Venezuela, in particular as regards to the economic war, because what the Colombian authority, among many things that the Colombian authorities have done, is the Colombian authorities have allowed local casas de cambio, that's some offices that are allowed to change money changes, to set the rate of exchange between Colombia's currency and Venezuelan's currency locally. So it's not set from a central authority. And that's one of the things that's contributed to the very, very disruptive wave of speculation, currency speculation, that has contributed to the economic crisis in Venezuela.
I mean, what you're talking about basically is the fact that they have lost control of the money supply to that extent.
So these talks that have been set up between Santos and Maduro, and who knows what's being said behind the scenes, but as an educated guess, I'd suspect that Maduro has again said to Santos, look, either you stop your hostile activities towards Venezuela, among which, for example, are executive orders from the Colombian government making it impossible for Venezuela to buy medicines in Colombia, that kind of thing.
Right.
And so Maduro will be saying to Santos, look, shape up or we're going to close the border and that will have a devastating effect on the local communities all along the border, economic effect on the Colombian side, at a time when the Colombian politicians are going into elections. And so...
Good, yeah, right.
Maduro is almost certainly saying that to Santos, shape up or I'm going to make your life electorally very, very difficult.
Good.
For at least for the electoral participants that Juan Manuel Santos favors because he can't take part in the election.
Right.
So that's what's happening in Colombia. And then let's shift a little to Ecuador. If you look at what's happening in Ecuador, Rex Tillerson's remarks about reinstating the Monroe Doctrine are very, very apt in the sense that they fit in with what the President Lenin Moreno has decided to do in Ecuador, which is to apply a right-wing agenda. And he still hasn't he's been in office almost a year now, but he still hasn't implemented the policies that he says he's going to implement to make Ecuador a paradise for everybody. So why not? Because he was waiting to hold a referendum that he could pass off as a popular vote on his policies. And that referendum was held, I think we discussed it briefly in a very hurried way in our last conversation. That referendum was a vote of seven questions covering a huge range of diverse areas in Ecuador's national life. But the fundamental point about that referendum is that it was unconstitutional in a very fundamental sense. And I don't just mean in terms of breaking the rules. Lenin Moreno exploited a loophole in Ecuador's constitution that only an extremely unscrupulous person would do. But beyond that, there was no real discussion about when Ecuador, back in 2006, when Rafael Correa took power, he was elected to the presidency. He spent 2 years trying to work with all sectors in the Ecuador, to devise a new constitution, which was eventually passed in 2008, the Monte Cristi Constitution. He took 2 years to work that out based on genuine popular consultation. Okay. Now, what Lenin Moreno did is a classic right-wing ploy of railroading through legislation in a very short time period, saying, people, we don't have time, we have to discuss this very important issue and get that decided, and then we can make the country better. And that all happened within a space of about 2 months,
right.
Never mind 2 years. So in that fundamental sense, what Lenin Moreno and his team did with that referendum was grossly abuse Ecuador's institutions in order to force through what is essentially a right-wing agenda, because that is what Lenin Moreno and Lenin Moreno's electoral opposition during the presidential elections, the right-wing opposition was saying, we have to have this referendum. Now, Lenin Moreno won that election on a radical platform that was somewhat watered down through between the first and second rounds of that presidential vote. But he still was elected on a radical platform that he's completely betrayed. And he's now implementing very, very clearly, essentially, the agenda of the right wing who lost the election, which is totally bizarre. But at the same time, it's very much in tune with Rex Tillerson's remarks about reinstating U.S. interest in the region and ensuring that their brand, that the U.S. style of kind of what he called democracy, but what is in fact the very opposite of democracy, should prevail in Latin America. And Lenin Moreno is very much in tune with that. Now, he too now is going to have talks with his Colombian counterpart, Juan Manuel Santos, about border security, but that is targeted at trying to reinforce the Colombian government's efforts to eradicate, if possible, the ELN guerrilla activities. And also, almost certainly, they'll be talking about Juan Manuel Santos will be trying to persuade Lenin Moreno to take a much harder line against Venezuela.
Right.
Now, we've spoken in the past about Lenin Moreno's likely moves over the next year or so. And I've suggested that one of the things that he's likely to do is to either outright withdraw from the ALBA progressive bloc of countries, that framework, or to drag his feet and be a negative influence inside ALBA and go for full membership for Ecuador of the Pacific Alliance group of countries that are trying to work on a free market, neoliberal style model of economic development. But from Tillerson's point of view, that itself, that too is problematic, because the Pacific Alliance countries, that's Chile, Mexico, Colombia, and Peru, they are developing their relationship with China, because the United States pulled out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. China stepped into the breach and is trying to encourage the countries that were ready to sign the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement to work in an economic and commercial and technical cooperation framework designed by China, working with them. And now what's happened is that the countries that were going to join the TPP until the US withdrew have managed to reconstitute it, a bit like Frankenstein, and put something back together without the United States. Right. But that is absolutely insane. And they, right. Because if they set that up without China, and the Pacific Alliance countries are going to find themselves kind of dealing with two separate frameworks. And it really, and looked at from an overall commercial and trade and technical cooperation perspective, it really doesn't make sense for the TPP countries to set up on their own and ignoring China, which right. was the original point of the TPP, as you yourself have pointed out,
right.
Dom.
That's right.
So those kinds of contradictions between the outright right-wing governments like Mexico and Colombia and Argentina, governments like that of Chile and Lenin Moreno, and to some extent Peru, that are kind of not entirely in the right-wing, that right-wing camp, because of their own contradictions. And Peru is trying to work with Bolivia, for example. Okay, so you have the extreme right-wing countries that are fully on board with the United States agenda. You have these countries that are kind of on board with it, like Chile, Peru, now that there's a right-wing president in Chile, Chile will probably align much more closely with Argentina and Colombia and Mexico. But, for example, Peru and Ecuador are kind of, they're in two minds because of their relationship with China. Ecuador also has strong relations with China. So, and then you have the countries that are opposed to all that, Cuba, Venezuela, Bolivia, Nicaragua. And then you have this kind of extraordinary situation in Brazil whereby Brazil, the Brazilian elites, they are at the cusp of this need to decide or need to negotiate this difficult relationship between: do we go with China? Do we go with the United States? What are the advantages for us as an elite? What are the advantages that we may consider having to think about for the Brazilian population in terms of us maintaining some level of domestic political support? What I'm trying to say in brief is I don't think Tillerson's explicit resuscitation of the Monroe Doctrine is going to be successful. That essentially is my take on Tillerson's remarks.
Yeah, and it's certainly much more complex than just saying, okay, fine, we're turning the Monroe Doctrine back on now. And we'll pick that up next week when we speak again. Tony, thank you very much.
Okay, you're very welcome, Don. Thanks for talking to me.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.